Welcome to Untold Physio Stories, a podcast that informs and educates by connecting you to rehab industry leaders who share their candid successes and failures in business and practice.
Welcome back to another episode of Untold Physio Stories. Jason, Shane, and I are back with our first episode of season four. And it's been so many episodes now, I don't even know how many stories Jason has told, but I feel like I've told more than Jason. So I thought that I would turn the reins over to him. And he has a story for us today, I think, about some sort of magical technique.
That's going to hook people in. You know what? This story is actually inspired by a podcast that I listened to you on, our mutual friend Ryan DeBell of The Movement Fix, when you were on one of his initial podcasts.
Oh, you mean the Magic Hands podcast?
The Magic Hands podcast, it was. Yeah. And I thought to myself, you know what? Dry needling is such a popular topic. How about I talk about magic needles? I think it'll be a good title. So for those of you who didn't listen to Erson's podcast on Ryan's, they were talking about magic hands and about how people would believe that, or some therapists may believe that what they can do with their hands is magic. They can either break scar tissue, or they can maybe magically put bones back into place that will then stay in place and not go back out of place. Until I think, as you so aptly describe it, anything that we do, any manual therapy input, including needling, that has a very quick effect is just that. It's probably a neurophysiological. Am I describing that correct, Erson?
Yeah, of course you are, Jason.
Perfect. So here's my story. So I have sometimes patients who will come in and they'll have woken up in the morning and they won't be able to turn their head right or left, maybe more than 10 degrees each way. I think even, Erson, you've had this happen to yourself before, have you not?
Oh, yeah, man. There was like a fan blowing on my neck all night. And I never even thought that was a real mechanism of injury, but I heard it so many times over the years. The first time I heard that, I was like, you're serious. I laughed. And I was like, oh, you're serious. And then it happened to me. And I'm like, what the hell? Right.
So, you need to save that story. That might be our next story. It'll be the follow-up. It'll be a bit of a next series.
So,
I think back when I first learned needling, I believe that I took probably to some extent the needles probably had more magic behind them than I do now. Not that I think they're a very useful tool. And I had a few patients who would come in. And I did the dry needling on their upper trap, which in general I found was normally the main limiting factor with these people who'd woken up with this, you know, unable to turn neck or wry neck, spelled W-R-Y, in the morning. And, you know, upon needling their upper trap, they would get back. Let's say they could only turn 10 degrees each way to begin. Sometimes they'd be able to turn close to full range of motion after, so upwards, you know, to 60 to 80 degrees each way. And then I had a person come in who actually happened to be a friend of my wife's as well. And I, you know, same thing, unable to turn the neck. And I'm thinking, you know what? I got the technique for you. And this was now, I've been needling for about 3 years. This is about 3 years, 3 years ago, very new to needling. Needle the upper traps. Not a huge improvement. Again, email that night. Oh, my neck is more sore. I'm not able to turn my head. No adverse reaction. Wasn't pneumothorax. But there wasn't that wow improvement. And I couldn't figure it out. Like, how had my magic needles failed me? And, you know, upon thinking about her personality type and her issues, she was a single mom, highly stressed, worked as a dental hygienist, repetitive movements, you know, there were many other factors as well. And looking back on it, it wasn't as simple, nor rarely is it, as a couple needles is going to magically fix an issue that is probably very lifestyle and, you know, repetitive movement related. And after realizing that, and here's, I think, the lesson I learned out of it and how I describe my quote unquote magic needles now, is I said about 20% of the time, there's a wow effect to the needles where it's just
only 20%. You are not taking placebo. Doing a nocebo effect.
But I'm not done. I describe it. I said 20%, there's a wow. You know, because I don't want to raise people's expectations too high. But then I'll say about 50% of the time, there's a positive effect where your pain might not be completely gone or range of motion might not be completely returned, but there's going to be a positive effect. And that brings it up to about 70%, which is, you know, as I think you said, there's like, you know, about 80% fast responders. And then I said 20% of the time, there may not be an effect, but I said that's the minority. And that's how I describe it now. And for me, the way I do that, yes, I know you could talk about nocebo, is I feel at least I'm being honest describing it, like with my clinical experience of the effect. And that's what I've taken away from it over the years. So I say, you know, hey, about 70%, heck, maybe even 80% are going to have a positive effect. But 20%, it might not make a difference. And, you know, I'm not sure if you can speak to that in terms of the interventions that you apply as well. But that's what I have found.
Oh, it's anything. I mean, I was just waiting for the last 10% because you only added it up to 90%.
Well, you know, there's that 10%.
10% they're going to get worse.
Well, you know, sometimes people do feel a little bit worse after you trial an intervention. I don't add that part in then.
Right. No, I mean, that's pretty fair, I would say. I think that I can easily be accused as being too positive. You know, you're being a bit more transparent.
And I like maybe a lot of therapists, either new therapists, long-term therapists, you know, struggle along this line. I'm sure I've seen numerous forums or threads talking about, you know, should we employ placebo? Should we not employ placebo? So I think
I'm trying not though. The thing is, how could you not? How can you not have a positive effect? How could you not positively affect patient expectation? That's pretty difficult. It's like saying, you should avoid clinical bias. And I just think every clinical bias that I have is a shortcut that leads me to, it's like clinical decision-making. What's the difference between clinical decision-making and clinical bias? You know, I mean, as long as I don't need to rule out cancer or fracture and I'm not missing like some sort of terrible pathoanatomical diagnosis that is going to kill the patient, I think my biases only enhance things. But I just think like somewhere along the line, you have to be midway between research and 100% research-based and 100% clinical practice-based and meet them in the midline and realize that your biases actually, the more experienced you are, as long as you're learning from your mistakes, your biases actually enhance your clinical practice as opposed to being a detriment.
I am on that side of the fence with you, Urson.
I don't even know how we got it. Are we still talking about the same thing?
We are still talking about the same thing. But, and you're at 8 minutes. We're still under our 10-minute mark.
Well, it's time to do some shout-outs. Thanks to UpDoc Media, of course, for hosting. We don't thank them enough. Please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Tell your friends. Like our Facebook pages. We're on Instagram as well. Modern Manual Therapy on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Shane Physiotherapy on Facebook. The biggest Canadian physiotherapist in the world on Facebook.
I'm not sure. Canadian world.
It's the same thing, right?
It is the same thing. Right. Looking forward to talking with you all next time.
All right.